This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You've noticed, I'm sure, no discussion of Canadian foreign policy during the debates between party leaders. Silence when it comes to the policy on Haiti, Afghanistan, Palestine. Even former Liberal Cabinet Minister and Member of Parliament for Victoria, David Anderson, publicly commented that he found it very strange. Well, maybe strange, but not unusual. Nonetheless, Haiti Solidarity activists have not been passive in response to this silencing of political discussion, and in Quebec in particular, they've succeeded in making Haiti an election issue. To discuss this, I'm joined by Yves Engler in Montreal. He is active with Haiti Action Montreal, and he's also the co-author of the book Canada in Haiti, Waging War on the Poor Majority. Greetings, Yves, and welcome back to the Red Eye program.
Good morning, Monica.
The party leaders didn't debate foreign policy, but what can you say about the platforms of the major parties on the question of Canada's policy in Haiti?
Well, first off, we can say that the Green Party has taken the best position so far. 2 days or 3 days before the debate here in Montreal, the first English debate on the 15th, or maybe it was 11th of January, the Green Party sent out a press release, which was their second or third press release regarding Haiti. It was pretty clear that Canada was involved in the coup, that the sovereignty of Haitians should be returned to them, demanded an immediate review of Canadian policy in Haiti, and called for Canada to support the position of the Caribbean community and the African Union, which both refused to recognize the installed and brutal dictatorship of Gérard Latortue. Moving along in the spectrum, we have the NDP, who at the time of the coup criticized the coup. That's back in March 10th of 2004. The overthrow of the elected president Jean-Bertrand Aristide happened on February 29th, 2004. But subsequently, the NDP was quite quiet on Canada's role in Haiti and quiet about the human rights disaster that took place in the subsequent months after the overthrow of the elected president. But in recent months, after a significant amount of work by Haiti Solidarity activists in terms of pressing the NDP, they have come around a little bit and have started to criticize the human rights situation there. But they still continue to believe, and they still continue to say in their letters that they send to Haiti Solidarity activists and that they send to the federal government or the Liberal government that Canada should be there, Canada should stay there, and that Canada, Canadian police are doing something possibly good in Haiti. Moving to the Bloc Québécois here in Quebec, they've been more or less supportive of Liberal policy in Haiti. There was a Standing Committee Foreign Affairs meeting about 3 or 4 months ago where the NDP, where Alexa McDonough, the NDP's foreign affairs critic, referred to Aristide's or the overthrow of Aristide as the removal of Aristide. The Bloc Québécois criticized the NDP for using the word removal. They preferred to use the word departure, which the word removal, in my opinion, is not strong enough. And regarding the Conservative Party, they haven't really said much. About 6-8 months ago, they sent out a press release, sort of a vague criticism of the human rights situation, but they haven't really said much about Canada's role in Haiti. And from the different all candidates debates across the country that we've heard from, generally the Conservatives basically say that they're going to put more money into military than Canada will be prepared to go into Haiti in even larger numbers. And obviously, the Liberal Party is the party that's supporting and that's giving the aid and assistance and policing support and political support to the unelected brutal regime in Haiti today.
And your effort now has been to make Haiti a live issue among voters in this election. In the Montreal area, what have you done to try and achieve this?
Yeah, well, we basically, a committee, the Comité Haïtien pour les élections fédérales 2006, a group from within the Haitian community that's against Canadian intervention in Haiti, started up a couple months back. And basically, we've run a pretty significant campaign against Pierre Pettigrew in his riding in Montreal, and a fairly significant campaign against Denis Coderre, Pierre Pettigrew being Canada's foreign affairs minister, Denis Coderre being Paul Martin's special advisor on Haiti. In Pettigrew's riding, Papineau, we've put up more than 2,000 posters with Pettigrew's face, calling saying he's wanted for crimes against humanity in Haiti. Handed out more than 10,000 leaflets in his riding, explaining his role in the coup d'état, his role in supporting the installed government in Haiti. And we've had a number of demonstrations now at Pettigrew's office. Pettigrew's tried to come to McGill and speak at McGill, the university, and we've, you know, made sure to be there and make life difficult for him. So we've run a fairly significant campaign, and we've been successful in getting the fact that there is opposition to Canada's role in Haiti into the paper. We were fortunate enough to finally get Sue Montgomery, a columnist for the Montreal Gazette, to write a column saying that both Denis Coderre and Pierre Pettigrew should resign or should lose their seats for what they've done in Haiti, and that Canada helped overthrow the elected government and is supporting a brutal regime. So we have been successful at getting Haiti onto the local media agenda, largely because there are a significant number of members of the Haitian community in both those ridings. There's more than 4,400 members of the Haitian community in the Papineau riding, and more than 10,500 members of the Haitian community in Denis Coderre's Bourassa riding. So with the obvious electoral force of the Haitian community, we've been able to use that as a way to get the media interested in knowing what Canada's doing in Haiti.
You mentioned the Gazette, which is the English language newspaper in Montreal. What about the French language press and television, radio?
Yeah, well, we've been able to get some television coverage and some newsprint coverage in La Presse, the largest sort of serious French daily. But we still have a number of problems regarding many of the NGOs here in Quebec. The so-called left-wing NGOs are sort of more or less supportive of Canadian policy. They tend to be on the Canadian International Development Agency's payroll for projects in Haiti, and to varying degrees, they tend to be supportive of liberal policy in Haiti, which causes a little bit of problem with regards to getting sympathetic press. And there's been a fairly significant demonization campaign of Jean-Bertrand Aristide. And even if we spend our time criticizing Pierre Pettigrew's role, there's significant sectors of the media that bring it all back to Aristide and questions of Aristide. But we have been able to get some press into the French press. So we have one in specific, a very sympathetic journalist at La Presse, who's done a number of very good stories about what's going on in Haiti.
You mentioned that there are about a little over 4,000 voters from the Haitian community living in Pierre Pettigrew's riding, and the Haitian community has been presented as a community that's divided on the question of the coup. The Bloc candidate is from the Haitian community in that riding. How do you assess the likelihood of those votes being against Pettigrew? He only won by a margin of, about 400 last time, something like that. What impact do you think the campaign and the supporters in the Haitian community might have in the election itself?
Yeah, and historically, immigrant communities in Montreal vote almost entirely liberal. They don't vote or at least for the past 15 years, 10, 15 years, they don't vote for the sovereigntist parties. So they vote liberal, and there's no doubt that Pierre Pettigrew, a base of his traditional support, is actually the Haitian community in his riding, and same thing with Denis Coderre and Bourassa. I don't There's no doubt in my mind that we will have an impact on many of the many of the Haitian voters in those ridings in terms of changing their vote. But I think we'll also have a more broad impact in just terms of opening a number of other people's eyes up into what Pettigrew is doing in Haiti or Coderre is doing in Haiti. I think that it looks pretty clear that Pierre Pettigrew is going to lose his seat. Obviously, that's not entirely of our doing, but I do think that we've been able to have an impact on voters. You know, everyone I know who lives in that riding talks about how many posters they see around, talks about how many leaflets they've seen floating around and whatnot. So I think we will have an impact. And to me, this will be a somewhat historic, not just, you know, sort of success for the Haiti Solidarity Movement and for the people in Haiti who are under the boot of what is basically Canadian imperialism today. To me, it would be a more general blow against Canadian imperial adventures anywhere. If politicians at the end of the day can be held accountable for what they do, foreign policy, the perception is that politicians can basically get away with whatever around the world, and they don't have to pay for that at the end of the day. So to me, it's not just a fight to advance justice and sort of freedom in Haiti, but it's also a more general fight against Canadian imperialism around the world. And I think it's one that we will most likely succeed in defeating the Foreign Affairs Minister on.
Now, elections are theoretically a place for a free and open exchange of opinion, but when you went to a Martin event very early on in the election campaign and were doing some heckling, which is usually quite normal, police jumped on you and you were arrested. More recently, in the Pettigrew campaign, the campaign office has pushed for charges of vandalism against you for putting up the posters. Do you how do you assess that heavy-handed response from the political candidates, in particular the Liberal Party in this case?
Well, there's no doubt that the heckling of Martin at the start of December, that the reaction of the RCMP and Martin's office was extremely heavy-handed towards, or disproportionately heavy-handed towards myself than it was towards others. I actually heard that later in the day, the day I heckled Martin and spent 4.5 days in jail for, and have these very onerous conditions that say I can't go or can't communicate with any member of parliament, either in Quebec or of the federal legislature or federal parliament. The same day that I heckled Martin in Cornwall, some farmers heckled Martin, and nothing. You know, they got kicked out of the venue. So I don't think there's any doubt that the RCMP and Martin's office very nervous about discussion about what Canada's doing in Haiti, and that their clampdown was in part at least due to the topic that was being Martin was being heckled for. And likewise with regards to Pettigrew's office, it was very obvious they were, you know, we were postering and they followed us for followed us for a bit, lost us, and then tried to find us again. We didn't actually know they were following us at the time, but so their office was very nervous about us, our postering, and about the campaign in general. And I think that there's a strong desire to clamp down on activism around the issue of what Canada is doing in Haiti.
Well, thank you very much, Eve, and best wishes for your ongoing solidarity work and appreciation for you making this an important issue in the election in your area.
Thanks a lot, Marika.
I've been speaking with Eve Engler in Montreal, where he's active with the Haiti Action Committee. Eve is co-author with Anthony Fenton of the book Canada in Haiti, Waging War on the Poor Majority. You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Raul Gatica is an indigenous activist from the state of Oaxaca in Mexico. He came to Canada last July for an international conference of indigenous people and filed a refugee claim shortly after his arrival. Raul Gatica is an organizer with Conseja Indígena Popular de Oaxaca, or CIPO. Gil Aguilar is a member of the Solidarity Group in Vancouver that supports SIPO. He joins me in the studio this morning to tell us more about the situation of Indigenous people in Oaxaca and about Raul Gatica. Hello, Gil.
Hi.
How did you first meet Raul?
We met at a lecture that he was giving at Simon Fraser University. He was trying to promote the work that he's doing in Oaxaca and to raise awareness of his issues by being here as a political refugee. And after the talk, we got together and we started talking. And that's why we, you know, started working together.
And that's how the Solidarity Group was formed here in Vancouver?
Yeah, it was basically people who expressed interest in what Raul was talking about. And slowly we began getting together and, you know, meeting with other people that were expressing the same sort of interest that, for example, I did, but I didn't know them yet, right? So it was like a sort of coming together from different areas, yeah.
And what kind of person is Raul? What do we know about him?
Well, Raul is an indigenous person from Oaxaca. He has been working with the SIPO for, I think, all his life, since he was about 12. And he is tireless with regards to working for indigenous struggles and to, you know, raise awareness about the issues and to solve the problems that they have had to face for so many years. So he is a very dedicated person, and he's in Vancouver because he has to. Otherwise, he'd be down in Oaxaca working with everybody else.
Tell us more about the situation that indigenous people face in Oaxaca.
Well, in Mexico in general, not just in Oaxaca, being an indigenous person is considered a bad thing. It's seen as something that you have to hide or that you should be ashamed of. In Oaxaca in particular, because of the high population of indigenous people, it creates a sort of weird dynamic where even though the majority of the population is indigenous, it is still very much repressed and frowned upon. So being an indigenous person in Oaxaca is not only a hard thing to do to get by every day, but you also have to face repression whenever you try to organize, whenever you try to deal with the issues that you have to solve in your communities. So it is very tough, and it is very hard to get something accomplished in indigenous communities. And nevertheless, they have never given up, and they are working very hard still to obtain what they have always wanted, which is basic things like recognition of the rights of the language, their culture, and also to obtain the benefits that they are entitled to as citizens of a country or of their own land, right?
Tell me more about the work that SIPO, the organization that Raul has been involved in, is involved in. What kind of work do they do?
SIPO was created in the early 80s as a coalition of organizations. So there were, I think, six organizations that came together, and they were sort of grassroots organizations, NGO sort of organizations. After a while, many of those organizations left, and only the communities, like the actual indigenous communities, were left. And they decided to continue with the SIPO. So the work that they do is, in a sense, grassroots building. For example, they go out and they build their schools because they have no schools. The government will not build schools. Or if, for example, they built a hospital in one of the communities, which is basically a little shack that has no supplies, and the doctor comes once every 2 weeks to the community. So what SIPO is doing and what the communities are doing is to take matters in their own hands and to try to solve problems with what they have and with what they can do, right? So in that sense, they are basically building on their own.
Mm. So in a sense, they're in addition to doing organization or political organization, they're actually doing direct action in the sense of taking their own fate and their own issues into their hands.
Yeah, the SIPO has something called tekyo, which is a indigenous word for something like, let's say, cooperation. So most members engage in tekyo. I would say all members engage in tekyo. And this means that members will try to help the community and the organization with whatever they can, so or in whatever way they can. So, for example, you know, people are poor; they don't have funds or resources to, you know, just pay for things. So, what they do is they go out and they work, and they, for example, work on the crops, or they work building, I don't know, a bridge, building a house. So they do engage very much in this sort of activities, and this is, I think, the core of what they do. The other side of that is to, you know, ask the government for recognition of the rights. So they, you know, create like civil disobedience, but not necessarily. So they do protests. They do everything is peaceful and everything is according to the law. So there is never an issue there. It's just that the government likes to portray this as, you know, they are troublemakers, they are terrorists, they working with guerrillas. But SIPO has never used weapons, has never done anything like that. And even still, they have been repressed by the paramilitary groups and the military.
What kind of repression does the organization face?
They've faced all sorts of repression, from simple name-calling by people and by even government officials to actual, you know, the police will come and they will, for example, if they have a protest on the main city square, the police will come and they will harass them and start, you know, asking them to leave as if they had no right to be there. There's been cases when SIPO has gone into certain government offices and basically taken them over peacefully. And then the military is sent and they basically storm in and they beat people up. They imprison them. And then there's the bigger issue, that is the paramilitary groups. So these groups come into the actual communities and they just start harassing people, they start shooting. SIPO has had many members killed, and that's basically why Raul is here, because he's been a target for many, many occasions.
And I understand that there have been, I think, up to 500 members that were in jail.
Yeah. That's a big issue, because usually what happens is that the police will come in, they will just randomly select people. Also, they will select leaders or what they perceive to be as important people, and they simply take them to jail for months, even years, without any charges laid or anything like that. And then SIPO, what they try to do is to work to get them out of jail, because there is no basis for them being there, but because of the political situation and you know, the ties between the police and the government and powerful landowners, it's very hard to simply go and do it the way it's supposed to be done, right?
I understand that Raul himself has been in jail a number of times.
Yeah, Raul has been imprisoned at least 11 times throughout his life. And every time that he's been imprisoned, the violence against him has escalated, because he doesn't quit. And he just takes it as, you know, if you're going to put me here to stop me, that's not going to work, and I'm going to show you. So every time that he's been taken into prison, it's been more violent.
Now, I understand Amnesty International has looked into his case. What did they find out? What did they conclude?
Well, Amnesty International has released documents to, like, recommendations for concerns for his safety. They have recommended the Mexican government to ensure that his safety is guaranteed. They have recommended the government of the state of Oaxaca as well to make sure that the threats that he's received are taken care of and that he is provided security. The government of Oaxaca at the time simply dismissed this, and they said, well, we can't do anything, so if you want him to be safe, you know, you deal with that. So Amnesty International has been behind the case for a while, and they know that this is a real case, and they have acted accordingly, but unfortunately the government in Mexico has not paid attention at all.
Raul's refugee hearing is going to be on Tuesday.
Yeah.
What will he do if he's turned down?
Well, what we've been talking about, and Raul is very firm on this, is that the process to obtain a political refugee status here, in our view, is something that should not be something to beg for or something to, you know, be on your knees begging all the time. if the case is you know, documented and it's real, like in the case of Raúl, we all at the Comuna feel that he should not have to go through an appeal process or anything like that, because all the evidence is there and it's tangible. So in that sense, Raúl will not try to appeal. We're still talking about that, because even though we are firm in this, we're also very concerned that if he is rejected and he's sent back to Mexico, he's going to be in danger. In general, though, we feel very strongly that he should not have to go through an appeal process, because everything seems to be, you know, okay with the documentation, and his situation is totally real. So,
you've got an event organized tonight. To support Raúl and Sipo. Can you tell us more about what you've got planned?
Yeah, tonight we're trying to have a party / festival so that people can come and, you know, get involved with the indigenous struggle in Mexico and Oaxaca. So we're trying to do events that do not necessarily mean, you know, like a very serious lecture where you have to learn, more than, you know, you just come out, you have a good time, and you manage to learn things and get involved. So we have, for tonight, a series of things. For example, we have a capoeira show from some people that helped us with that. They are supporting us in that way. We also have
That's a combination, is it Brazilian dance and martial arts?
Yeah, that's right. So there's going to be an exhibition of that at the beginning, and then we're going to have some traditional Oaxacan dances that some members of the organization are going to be performing. We're going to be showing a documentary that another member of the organization is finishing up. She just went down to Oaxaca to visit and gather some stuff that we needed for the event. And there's also going to be mole, which is a Mexican chocolate sauce. It's very traditional and it's very Oaxacan. We're going to be serving that all night. And then we're going to have music so people can just dance and, you know, have a good time.
Sounds like a excellent way to raise the energy and the consciousness at the same time.
Yeah. The idea here is that we want to get people involved without having to, you know, ask them or preach anything. You know, just have a good time with us, and we'll, you know, let you know about the issues that we're talking about.
Brilliant. Great. Thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Thanks a lot for having me.
We'll give the information so people can attend the event where it's going to be.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. I've been speaking with Gil Aguilar. Gil Aguilar, and the event tonight is at St. Michael's Church. That's at 409 East Broadway, and it starts at 7 p.m., and it sounds like not to be missed.